Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Altvader. Fred, go Pats! Yes! How are you
today? They killed him, didn't they? Hey, Carlos, don't worry about me. I survived the blizzard of 2015. We've got 12 inches of snow on the ground here in Toledo, and the temperature is well below freezing. But I'm ready to talk about Brooks and Lydia and Rory and Tiger. Let's go.
And Patrick, too. We have Patrick Reed. How can we forget about Patrick Reed? We have a great show for you. We have Shane. Hey, we have Shane Ryan, who is going to be our very important guest of the week. And he's going to be talking about his recent allegations made about Patrick Reed. But we're going to start with the Par 5 news, as usual, presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, I know you have a couple of things to talk about. I know you're going to talk a little bit about the caddies and, of course, the youngsters that are doing great to start the year.
Yeah, Carlos, let's just start off the show real quick. Picked us up today. The caddies, the PGA Tour caddies, are filing a $50 million lawsuit against the PGA Tour. Kind of boils down to saying, hey, everybody's getting rich, and we're out here wearing these bibs with all these logos, corporate logos that they're paying big money for. I'm a walking signboard here, but I'm not getting paid for it. So, you know, they're going to get some money out of this deal. I think they got a heck of an argument here, and I know you and Kieran get tired of me talking about the caddies, but I think they're the most underappreciated people in golf, and looks to me like they're going to get some money out of that deal. So, hey, let's move on. Carlos, this was a youth movement weekend. We got the kids really doing well in golf. It seems like we talk about the youth movement every week on the show. You've got we all know about the heroics, of course, of Jordan Spieth, but you can add another talented young player to the long, long list. You got Brooks Koepka, who you and Kieran alerted us here at the Back 9 Report in 2013. You guys were right on top of that story, said, we got to watch this guy. We've been watching him ever since. He got his maiden victory on the PGA Tour at the Waste Management Phoenix Open over the weekend. 24-year-old Koepka posted 71, 68, 64, and a 66 to finish at 15 under par, one shot better than Bubba Watson, Ryan Palmer, and Hideki Matsuyama, who was yet another budding young player. Koepka, like Peter Uihlein, went the route less traveled and earned a European Tour card after missing the cut in the 2012 U.S. Open as an amateur, turned professional, and joined the Challenge Tour. He won his first event on the European Tour's minor league circuit in September 2012. He added three more wins on the Challenge Tour in 2013 and earned his full playing privileges on the European Tour for last season. He just went out, earned 1.6 million euros last year. He won at the Turkish Open in the Race to Dubai Series final, and he finished number 8 in the Race to Dubai. So he had a pretty good year in Europe last year. And while he was doing all that, Carlos, he also earned enough on the PGA Tour in 16 starts to earn his 2015 PGA Tour card with one third-place finish, six top 25s, and he earned over $1 million in the U.S. So, you know, understandably exhausted, he took the entire month of December off, but he's come back ready to go in 2015. This win at the Waste Management Phoenix Open moves him to number 19 in the world ranking and puts him on the fast track with young players like Patrick Reed, Hideki Matsuyama, and Jordan Spieth. So a lot of young talent coming up on the PGA Tour. But that's not all, Carlos. There's more just for you. We're going to double the offer. Lydia Ko. The last time we saw teenage phenom Lydia Ko, she won the CME Group Championship, hoisted the race to the CME Globe, and pocketed $1.5 million for 4 days' work. She won three titles last year, finished third on the money list with a rookie record of $2 million and won LPGA Tour Rookie of the Year going away. Wasn't even close. She had it locked up by May. She posted 15 top 10 finishes and 26 starts last year, plus won the Swinging Skirts in April, the Marathon Classic in July, and the CME Group Championship at the end of the season, which demonstrated her consistent play all year long. Her overall statistics are additional proof of the domination capable of this young superstar from New Zealand. She only ranked 86th in driving distance, but she finds a fairway 79% of the time. Her 74% greens in regulation ranked her number 7 in that category and allowed Ko to finish inside the top 10 in scoring average, rounds under par, birdies, and rounds in the 60s. She was in contention to win her first event of the year on Saturday, had the Saturday finish of the Coates Golf Championship, but an uncharacteristic double bogey left her at 15 under par, one shot back of Na Young Choi. The tie for runner-up, though, was good enough to jump her over Indy Park and Stacey Lewis for the number one spot in the world. Carlos, the LPGA, we didn't think they could top last year, but they're off to a rousing start. And how long can Lydia Ko hang on to the world number one with Stacey, Envy, Michelle, and Lexi right behind?
She has to do it because she has the slimmest of margins, and any slip can bring her down and anybody would be back up. But hey, congratulations to her on becoming the youngest golfer ever. Tiger Woods had that record before, but she's now the youngest golfer ever to become number one in the world. So kudos to her. Great. Well doing. And while we were talking about youngsters, and a young guy we have to talk about, he's not as young as Brooks or maybe Lydia, but hey, he's the number one golfer in the world, and we're talking about Rory McIlroy. He's also off to a great
start. He's all the way to 25.
Yeah. So, hey.
Getting old.
Yeah, he's old now. He's the senior of that bunch. So he's off to a great start in 2015. 2 weeks ago, as you might remember, he finished second in the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship. But this past weekend, he laid down the law there to win the Dubai Desert Classic ahead of his courtroom battle that started today. You know, he shot a supreme 72-hole display, giving it that it took place against the backdrop of his imminent legal battle with his former management company with tens of millions of pounds at stake. We rightly go on about his rare gifts for striking the ball, but let's not forget his remarkable maturity and composure that he has exhibited so far. This easy three-shot victory underlined the truism that when he's playing at or close to his best these days, there's no one else having a prayer at it. He's so good right now, it's just a shame his tilt at becoming only the sixth player to complete the career Grand Slam at the Masters is not taking place this week, but is rather in April. Oh, man. But what is going on this week is really serious, and it's the case where he's suing his former management company and, in turn, is being countersued by them. Previous efforts to resolve the dispute through court order mediation have proven unsuccessful. The case centers on Mr. McIlroy's contract with the Dublin-based Horizon and two other linked companies, the Malta-based Gerting and Canavan Management, also based in Dublin. In court papers, when the case was launched in late 2013, it was claimed that McIlroy signed up with Conor Rich's agency at an informal meeting on the day of Horizon's Christmas party in 2011 when the golfer was back in 22. Rory claims that the fees charged by Horizon were almost four times what top 10 golfers pay to agents. Horizon is countersuing the four-time major winner after breaking his contract early. Fast forward to when the case resumed at the High Court this afternoon, counsel for the golfer, Paul Gallagher, SC, said that further progress has been made during ongoing talks between both legal teams. Judge Brian Cregan granted the adjournment to 11 a.m. tomorrow. Rory was present in court for each of today's brief sessions. The barristers for both sides had earlier agreed to put back the opening of his action against Horizon Management to 4 p.m. At that point, Judge Cregan was told by Mr. Gallagher that both parties were making progress. Barristers told the judge this morning that as the case was set to last 8 weeks, the legal teams wished to narrow the issues at hand, so wished to delay a start until the afternoon. McIlroy might have to appear in front of the Beak for up to 6 days as the legal teams picked over the contract he signed, which he claims to be unconscionable, but which Horizon claims proves he owes them millions in commission. When the judge will no longer require his presence, McIlroy will return to his West Palm Beach home and draw a line. Regardless of how much it is eventually adjudicated, he has to hand over or otherwise. Only then he will genuinely be able to prepare for his tilt at the career Grand Slam at the Masters in Augusta in April. Fred, I think that he's ready no matter what after what we saw this past weekend. And at Augusta, the Masters is his to lose.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a problem for him, though, Carlos. I still kind of think they'll solve something and get it settled. But 8 weeks, what can take 8 weeks? My goodness, that you could recreate the world in 8 weeks, for goodness sake. You know, that's unbelievable. But, yeah, they need to get this thing done. It's a ongoing problem for him. He needs to just get back to playing golf. So, hey, Carlos, in the news this week, Harbortown Golf Links has been the site of the RBC Heritage Classic since Arnold Palmer won the first event there in 1969. Pete Dye designed Harbortown Golf Links with the help of Jack Nicklaus. It was Nicklaus's first attempt at golf course design. The course is famous for its narrow fairways with overhanging oaks, pines, palmettos, and dark lagoons, plus small greens. Harbortown Golf Links, along with the Ocean Course and Heron Point, make up the Sea Pines Resort. The iconic course will get a spruce-up makeover after April's RBC Heritage. Sea Pines Resort announced the course would close for the summer season starting in May, so tee boxes, fairways, rough, and greens can be renovated. They're going to replace the grass with some Celebration Bermuda. The greens will be regrassed with the Tiff Eagle Bermuda. That's what they've always had there, but they're just going to do an update, refresh it. They're going to put a new irrigation system in so they can better manage the water there. The project is expected to be finished. The course reopened in late September. The RBC Heritage is always played the week following the Masters, and the pros love the relaxed atmosphere of Hilton Head after spending a full week in the pressure cooker at Augusta National. Harbortown is one of America's gems, and it's good to see it getting a facelift after 45 years. By the way, Carlos, I was standing by the famous red and white lighthouse that guards the small harbor and looked over at the 18th green on Harbortown, where the flag was flapping in the breeze coming off of Calabogie Sound just a couple of weeks ago. Love Hilton Head, recommended highly for anyone wanting to get out of the snow and cold this winter.
And not only this winter, I mean, with the storm that is going on right now in the east, you know, anybody could go right now and use any of it, so we'll see. But no, it's great to see that they're getting a facelift, and hey, we can't wait to see how it's going to turn out. Hey, we've been talking about Sangmun Bae and his ongoing military troubles have reportedly reached the South Korean High Court. Facing conscription after being denied an extension on his overseas stay, PGA Tour golfer Sangmun Bae has taken legal action to hold off military service, sources close to the South Korean said last Thursday. Per the Korea Herald, sources said the two-time PGA Tour winner had filed an administrative suit January 16th through his legal representatives after the Military Manpower Administration refused to extend his overseas travel permit in December. Bae, who is 28, is seeking to extend his travel visa, which expired at the end of last year, and delay his mandatory military service. At issue is South Korea's two-year compulsory military requirements all males must fulfill between ages 18 and 35. Conscription remains in place as South Korea never signed a peace treaty with North Korea following their division in 1953. One source close to Bay told the Herald, if he wanted to dodge the service, he would simply have applied for his U.S. citizenship without filing for the suit. He's playing well right now, and he's hoping to delay the conscription for the time being. Bay, who made his PGA Tour debut in 2012, earned his permanent U.S. residency in 2013 in January. He has insisted that he's trying to merely delay his conscription in order to keep playing on the PGA Tour rather than to dodge the military service entirely. He appears to be a strong candidate to make the national team at the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, where golf will make the return to the Olympics for the first time since 1904. Bay has said his goal is to win an Olympic gold medal. That's a good thing. You know why? Because South Korean male athletes who win an Olympic medal of any color receive an exemption from the military service if they haven't already fulfilled their duties. So I think he wants to try to make it until that year. South Korea will host also the President's Cup this fall between the United States and a team of non-European international players. And Bay could be a popular attraction for the fans here, and said the President's Cup was a really big tournament for him this year. As I said, he's a two-time PGA Tour winner. He won the Fries.com Open in October, and right now he's 76th in the official world golf ranking, making him the highest-ranked South Korean, and he currently sits fourth in the FedEx Cup standing. So, Fred, I don't know, but he should just... what really I don't get is, you know, if you have to fulfill it between 18 and 35, he's 28. Hey, why not wait one more year? I mean, I don't know what the big deal is about this.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, probably he should have probably done it when he was younger if he would have had the opportunity, I guess. But, you know, you just keep, you know, I'm sure he thought something else would happen or whatever, but he's hit a hot streak here the last couple of years, and it'd be unfortunate that he'd have to take some time away. But, yeah, that is what it is. Good luck for him. Hey, Carlos, golf fans should have noticed a new voice on the CBS broadcast crew last weekend at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Longtime CBS announcer and former European Tour star Peter Oosterhuis announced his retirement from the broadcast booth, and that left an opening for a new voice at CBS. Frank Nobilo, veteran broadcaster and winner on both the European and the PGA Tours, joined CBS Sports as an analyst for the network's golf coverage. He will work select tournaments, including the Masters and PGA Championship. Sean McManus of CBS Sports said, Frank Nobilo is one of the most intelligent and engaging analysts in golf. His knowledge of the game and insight as worldwide champion make him a perfect fit for CBS Sports golf coverage. We are proud to showcase the strongest ensemble of voices in golf. Nobilo joins Jim Nance, six-time major champion Nick Faldo, Peter Costas, Ian Baker Finch, Gary McCord, and David Faraday. Nobilo won 14 titles worldwide, including two Sarazen World Opens on the European Tour and the 1997 Greater Greensboro Chrysler Classic on the PGA Tour. A three-time member of the International President's Cup team, he also served as assistant captain for the 2009 and 2011 International President's Cup team. Nobilo is a veteran of several professional golf tours and represented New Zealand 12 times in the World Cup and 11 times in the Dunhill Cup. Nobilo began his professional golf career on the Australasian Tour in 1979 after winning the New Zealand Amateur in 1978. Since retiring from full-time competition in 2002, Nobilo has served as an analyst for Golf Channel and will continue in that role. Nobilo will be similar to Faldo in that regard, as both are engaged by NBC's The Golf Channel and CBS. Nobilo was born in New Zealand, now resides in Orlando. And, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to MyGolfin US, which offers you discounted golf rounds in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows you to sell used or new equipment and earn sale credits on every sale. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity. Carlos, back to you.
There you have it, www.UnitedGolfNetwork.com. Don't miss it. That was the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And now we have our section for the BIG, the very important guest of the week. And this is a hot topic. We had to bring in one very hot gun of them. So let's put into perspective what is going on. You know, during the past 2 years, Patrick Reed, he has grabbed headlines through his brash antics on the course, and as well as his bold statements to the media. And last Friday, Grant Lynn's Shane Ryan released an excerpt from his upcoming book, Slaying the Tiger, A Year Inside the Ropes on the New PGA Tour, and was published on TobaccoRoadBlues.com, casting more shadows on Reed, describing the 24-year-old as golf's remorseless villain, only concerned with winning many times at all costs, and puts forth allegations that Reed cheated and stole while a student in college. To that, Reed and his IMG management team issued a statement to GolfChannel.com that says the following: "The accusations that were made against me are serious and were intended to damage my reputation and character. They will not be taken lightly. My team and my representatives are looking into all aspects of this matter, and we look forward to setting the record straight. For now, I am staying focused on my life in the present and being the best husband, father, and golfer that I can be." After that, Reed also made some comments to respond to it. But hey, let's go for it. This week, our VIG is one of those two sides and is the one from Shane Reed, who is the author of the book that contains those allegations and that is due to be released in May 2015. Fred, you got the chance to record that interview. Tell us a little bit about what we're about to hear.
Yeah, as I was reading Global Golf Post, as I do every Monday morning, I came across this story on Tobacco Road Blues by Shane Ryan about Patrick Reed. As you mentioned, his new book will be out in May about a year he spent on the PGA Tour. One of the chapters dealt with the college career of Patrick Reed and his dismissal from the University of Georgia. I found it fascinating and just really couldn't stop. So I looked up his contact information, got him on the phone after a couple emails, and we recorded this interview. I found it quite interesting.
Let's play it.
We are talking with Shane Ryan, who is an author that has a new book, Slaying the Tiger, A Year Inside the Ropes of the New PGA Tour, coming out in May. In the book, he alleges in a post to Tobacco Road Blues that professional golfer Patrick Reed was kicked off the Georgia golf squad for cheating and stealing. Shane, welcome to the Back Nine Report. Why have you chosen to release the information now from your new book that won't be released until May?
Yeah, so, you know, it was funny because, when you write a book, you finish well ahead of time, and you have to wait a few months before it's published. And so what happened is I had, this story done in November, had it all written up, all my sources and everything, and then I kind of was anxious the whole time. I was always afraid that somebody would do a story on Patrick Reed and get a lot of the stuff that I had and run it before I had a chance to publish my book. Whereas, if I was writing this for a magazine, I wouldn't have to worry about that because the story would go out right away. So anyway, that was my big fear, and sure enough, it came true. I found out that Sports Illustrated was doing a story on Patrick Reed, and the guy writing it was Alan Shipnuck, who's a wonderful investigative reporter and just very, very talented, which is, for me, the ultimate nightmare scenario, because if anybody was going to get some of the stuff I had, it was going to be Alan and Sports Illustrated. And so I kind of felt like I had no choice, really. I felt like this was something that I had worked really hard on, and it would have hurt a lot to let somebody get that before me. So, yeah, I made the decision to go ahead and publish that before anybody else could.
Patrick Reed has won 4 times in the past 17 months, most recently at the High Under Tournament of Champions in Hawaii. And he was one of a few bright spots on Captain Tom Watson's U.S. Ryder Cup team last September at Glen Eagles. Yet in the article, you say he's just not too well received by his fellow competitors.
Yeah, that's been true for Patrick for a while. I think he's long had a tendency to sort of rub people the wrong way and to turn, you know, teammates and colleagues and fellow golfers and everybody against him. I think it's just been a part of his personality that's dogged him for a few years.
You, of course, Reed started his collegiate career. He was an outstanding amateur player, very driven at a young age. Started his college career at Georgia for Coach Chris Hack, but was summarily booted off that team after his freshman season. What were some of the reasons? What were some of the things behind that dismissal?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a few things that sort of built up over time. Like I said, he wasn't really well-liked by his teammates or anything like that, but, you know, that's just that's sort of an incidental detail. It's not something that would get somebody kicked off a team. They did think they caught him cheating during a qualifying event one time, and then he was accused of stealing from a teammate's locker. But I think the straw that broke the camel's back was that he was arrested twice on alcohol charges. And the second time, he and his parents sort of covered it up. They hired a lawyer, and the coach didn't find out until a little bit later. And when he found out, that was sort of the last straw for him. And that was, you know, I think in February. And at that time, they sort of said, okay, well, this is not working out. So you can continue to use the practice facilities, and you know, have access to academic tutoring and everything like that, but start looking for a place to transfer for next season.
You know, and that Georgia Bulldog team, that was pretty powerful. You had Brian Harmon, Harris English, Hudson Swafford, and Russell Henley, who are all now PGA Tour members, were a part of that. So, you know, he's faced to deal with those people all the time and come out of that difficult situation. So he made his way over to Augusta State. And the coach there, Josh Gregory, who has since moved on, was able to talk Reed into moving down to a smaller school. And based on the letter, won 2 NCAA Division I golf championships in 2010, 2011 with Reed on the team. But Reed was really still not much of a team player.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of funny. One of the details that I really thought was interesting was that he was so combative, and, you know, his teammates, again, just like at Georgia, you know, they didn't really like him. But what it did was it fostered this very competitive atmosphere within the team so that, you know, they didn't like each other, but they were sort of at each other's throats. And in a way, it built them up into this competitive juggernaut so that when they went, you know, into the NCAAs, and of course, when they won the national title the first year, it was the first year that there was a match play format in the finals. And so, you know, it's head-to-head golf for the last 3 rounds, and they were like this strong, battle-hardened team almost because they had been so vicious and so competitive with each other.
So maybe that's what the U.S. Ryder Cup team needs a little bit more of, is that combative buffing heads and being aggressive to that nature to turn the thing around in the Ryder Cup competitions.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. You know, Phil Mickelson had his Tuesday practice rounds, which is when he first started playing with Keegan Bradley. Ricky Fowler plays in those, Dustin Johnson, and a lot of guys that have ended up on the Ryder Cup team. And that's, you know, it seems that they showed some results in the Ryder Cup by doing that. And it's the same idea. It's like, you know, they're very friendly and they don't hate each other or anything, but their goal is to raise the competitive stakes so that they feel that pressure and so that they have some sort of competitive match play experience, which, you know, as you know, is not a common thing to have on the PGA Tour. So it's really something you have to build up. You have to build up that muscle. And, yeah, I think you're dead on, and I think Phil Mickelson has kind of starting to do that. And, by the way, if I can plug it, I have an article on those practice matches coming out this week in ESPN the magazine.
Cool. You also mentioned in the article that Reed kind of has a rough situation, rough relationship with his parents. What seems to be the problem with that?
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, and it's tough. It's tough in a story like this, and I tried to leave it. I tried to only kind of go over the broad strokes when I wrote the story because you're never really getting the full story, and it's really hard to know who to trust. So essentially, what you can do is just sort of see what's out there and what's, you know, factual. We know that they didn't, they were not invited to Patrick's wedding. Patrick left home at a certain point after college, which obviously is normal, but, you know, became estranged from his parents at that point. They didn't go to the wedding. They're not in contact now. And then his parents are all over social media, on Twitter especially, with these sort of very loosely disguised messages asking Patrick to contact them or lamenting the fact that he has not contacted them. You know, including his dad putting up a message on Patrick's wedding day saying, you know, essentially that, you know, sometimes family disappoints you. You know, all these kind of things that are a little bit vague but very clearly designed to be addressed to Patrick. And then the really overt one, which has since been deleted, was his dad tweeting that, you know, he was angry at Patrick for not contacting his little sister Hannah on her birthday. So there's this, you know, his parents won't speak on the record about the rift, but at the same time, they're speaking on the record all over Twitter. So yeah, so it's a complicated thing, and those are the broad strokes that we know for sure.
The modern way to carry on family tribulation.
Hey, yeah, exactly.
With his new baby and his marriage to wife and his caddy Justine, Do you see him calming down anytime soon, or are these inner demons and this drive going to get him to major championship trophies in the near future?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, certainly speaking of major championships, I mean, I really think he's one of the toughest young golfers and the best winners among the Americans that are out there right now. Under 30, I would actually, you know, I put him at the top. I think he's really a hard character and a really great pressure player and a winner. So yeah, I can definitely see him winning majors. As far as his personality changing, I always want to be careful with that because I think in sports media in general and golf media too, there's a tendency and almost a desire to, you know, when somebody has any trouble, we immediately want to write the redemption story and about how their life is going to improve. And sometimes we get burned on that because, you know, I think people can change, but I don't think people change easily. And sometimes we want to, sometimes we want to write the easy story about how people put their lives together. And you know, it makes fools of us later on when we find out that they're the same as they've always been. So, you know, it's hard to say if Patrick will change. I don't know. I don't think he's as overtly confrontational as he once was, but whether that means he's, you know, changing in any meaningful way, it's, you know, impossible for me to say.
You spent over a year traveling the tour, and you know, was there anything other surprising tidbits or surprising things that you noted or that you're going to be writing about in the future?
Yeah, you know, I just think there's a lot. I think the book that I'm writing is going to be very interesting for people because it's, you know, Patrick Reed obviously is one of the more incendiary pieces that's going to be in the book, but I think there's going to be a lot of things that humanize these guys in a way that the media doesn't always do. So I think, you know, for fans of golf and even for fans of sports in general, I think there's going to be a lot of those details in there that you're going to look at and go, you know, that's really interesting, and that's something I didn't know about this person. And I think that was the goal of my book, is to get at the humanity behind all of these guys because, you know, as you know, when someone's making millions of dollars and they're a sports star, it's very easy for them to become an icon and for fans and media to lose sight of the person behind the fame and behind the money. And behind the great athletic skill. So that was my ultimate goal, and, you know, there are a lot of other details like that in the book that are coming out, and I think people would really, you know, enjoy that.
Well, we've been talking with Shane Ryan, the author of a new book, Slaying the Tiger, a year inside the ropes of the new PGA Tour that will be coming out in May. He has, it's not really an excerpt, but he has some notes and an article posted to Tobacco Road Blues. That's a very interesting read. I found that I had to read through the whole thing this morning. I couldn't stop, and I wanted to talk to you about this a little bit. So, Shane, thank you so much for giving some time and talking to us about this part of the book.
You got it. Thanks a lot for having me, Fred. I appreciate it.
There you have it. That was Shane Ryan, the author of the book that has those allegations on Patrick Reed. And Fred, very interesting, the side that Shane is portraying right now. Of course, we have listened from him. Like I said before at the beginning of the section, Patrick Reed has answered those allegations, and as well, Shane has also countered the allegations from Patrick Reed. So this is not going to be the last that we're going to be hearing about this, but definitely is something that we really would like to keep talking about it.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. You know, Carlos, we all probably did things in college and in our early years that maybe weren't most well advised, certainly. And, you know, Patrick was a very focused on golf at a very young age. He had no other, really outlets. He wasn't a real social person. He played golf, and he wanted to beat the other kids. It wasn't, he was Tiger Woods, of his age group. He and so his social skills maybe were a little bit lacking. And, you know, whenever that's a problem, those really show up when you leave home and you go to college and you're out on your own and you're in with other people. And so, he probably even went into a shell more, and that creates distrust among, team members and other people. And so, it's unfortunate. You know, he comes across as being cocky, overconfident. You know, he made that comment last year after Doral, I'm the top five player in the world. But on the other way, maybe it's a little bit more refreshing, Carlos. Maybe the U.S., the PGA Tour needs a few more characters like him that just want to go out there and kind of kick butt and take names and kind of turn the genteel PGA Tour maybe upside down a little bit. And, maybe we'll start seeing some Ryder Cup wins coming down the road.
In that sense, I would say I have to agree with you because we really need that spark. And Patrick Reed definitely gave it during the Ryder Cup. And like you mentioned, who will forget what he said when he was one of the top five players in the world. And, I mean, he has the skills to back it up. He just should keep his mouth shut a little bit more and not back it up with his mouth as much. But I don't know. But like you mentioned, maybe something when he was young, maybe of that relationship with his parents, like Shane was saying, that we will never get to know for maybe the whole truth. But hopefully he can tone it down. He's a great character, and he can move forward from this. I hope he just leaves it as it is. Hey, move on. Let it go. Let bygones be bygones, and let's go and do something else and keep his mind in the game. That's what I hope he does.
Yeah, but you know what happens in these situations with these kind of people? He takes so much, and then he just has to explode. And he may explode on the golf course. He may explode in front of a camera. I mean, this is just a kind of a ticking time bomb waiting to happen. You know the kind of guy. And Patrick Reed seems to be that way. So, it may, even boil over and affect his play. You know, his mind may start to wander and maybe not focus and say, oh, what the hell? I don't need this crap. So we wish him all the best. Everybody's done stuff in college that they're maybe ashamed of or somewhere along their life. And, you just, okay, tomorrow's a new day, you move on. So, he's got a chance to write a new story tomorrow and the next day. And, I hope he does, because I tell you what, the PGA Tour needs his style of game. I'm a fan of Patrick Reed's golf game. Don't know about him off the golf course, but I'm a fan of his play. He made me that. He earned that because of the way he plays. So I wish him all the best, and I hope this does kind of blow over. If he handles it right, it will. But we'll see.
We'll see. I know that there's a lot of ways that you can manage this thing, and hopefully he does it the right way, and we can, like, I have to agree with you. I love to watch him play. He has a great spark, and hopefully he can tune it in for the better for him. So wish him, I join you there, and wish him the best of luck. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we go to the practice range, and since, you know, making addresses, you know, to the State of the Union and all that is right now something very common, we're going to address the state of the Tiger game, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range, where Fred and I will take one topic and give it our shots. Let's see what comes out of it. And this week, we're going to be addressing the state of the Tiger game, the Tiger Woods game. Fred, Tiger is in Colorado at the Women's Super G at the 2015 Alpine World Ski Championships. Begin to cheer on his girlfriend, Lindsey Vonn. He was seen on the large video screen in Red Tail Stadium, standing just outside the finish area wearing a black jacket, shades, and a black hat. Vonn went out to win bronze in the race, finishing 0.15 seconds behind the winner, Anna Fringer of Austria. So maybe she has caught a bit of the Tiger faction. She's starting to lose. You know, unlike his recent visit to Cortina d'Ampezzo, Italy, where Tiger witnessed Vonn's record-breaking 63rd World Cup victory, he was not an incognito hiding his face behind a skeleton mask. But last Friday, Woods missed the cut at the Phoenix Open, the first time in his career he has missed back-to-back cuts in official PGA Tour events. And I guess he should have been justified to not wear only the mask, but to wear a whole-body costume, you know. He shot an 11 over 82. I mean, I would have made a makeover and get out of there running. But, you know, it's not the fact that he has missed back-to-back cuts. It's how he has missed them. I'm not even really sure how to put in words what I witnessed this week from the Big Cat. This was the most confused, tentative, and unsure I think I've ever seen Tiger Woods. He had no idea which way the ball was going off the tee. He struggled with distance control. His putter wasn't spectacular. And the chip shots. Oh, my God. I have better chip shots than that. And that's all I'm saying. You know, Tiger was befuddled by straightforward shots that most amateur golfers can nail 7 or 8 times out of 10. Tiger was so helplessly lost from around the green that he used at least 5 different clubs to get the ball on the putting surface. And how did most of those attempts turn out? Not good. Not good at all. Long gone are the days when Tiger would effortlessly and fearlessly flop a shot onto the green and expect it to go in. We now live in a world where he closes his eyes, maybe, and hopes that bumping for a 4-iron, 8-iron, putter, or pull cue will get the ball within 20 feet. It was a surreal train wreck, for sure. But what is the excuse this time? By all accounts, he's healthy, so that's out. It is the new Nike clubs and balls, maybe. But, you know, Rory McIlroy was busy in the Middle East proving that they work just fine when operated properly. I mean, it does appear that his most recent swing chain has some effect, but it can't be the whole story. Maybe the most likely answer is the one he'll never talk about. His mental stability standing over those kinds of shots. Don't say it out loud. Think about that sentence for a second. This is Tiger Woods we're talking about. This is the guy that converted an obscene amount of 54 leads into tour victories. It is the very same person that could recover like no one else and wipe the slate clean after a bad hole. Those tears are long gone. Whether his psyche was obliterated just like the front end of his Escalade back in 2009, or he has just other priorities at this point in life, it is shocking to watch the most dominant player ever, both mentally and physically, look so helpless. Can he get it back? Who knows? Fred, you know, the next 2 months heading into the Masters will be one of the most fascinating stretches of his career. He's heading to his happy place this week at Torrey Pines, where he has won 8 times, so we won't have to wait long to see what Tiger has in his tank.
You know, Carlos, I posted an article this week that the reports of the death of Tiger Woods' golf career may be premature. And you make some very good points. He looked very, very bad in missing the cut last week.
Understand.
In 82, yeah, in 82, that's like his all-time worst round in competition, I think. You know, he was, what, only 2 guys shot worse in the field than he did. But here's the bottom line, Carlos. The bottom line is that Tiger Woods does not need a Waste Management Phoenix Open trophy. He doesn't need a Farmers Insurance Open trophy. He doesn't need those things. He's got, what, 78 or 79 trophies at home, and like 15 or 14 of them are major ones, you know. So he's only looking for those big trophies. He hasn't played competitively since, I mean, he played, yeah, in the Hero World Challenge, but that was, I don't know if you want to count that, you know, since before the PGA Championship, and, you know, that's a long time away. So the problems are a couple. Number one, you hit on one of them, mental. You know, Tiger has not been the same guy since Thanksgiving 2008. You know, going through all that personal problems that he had, the rehabilitation, that's kind of changed something in him. He's been, you know, a little bit more outgoing. You know, he's just been a different person, and I think he's lost just a little bit of that competitive edge. Number two is he doesn't spend near as much time practicing and putting the work in as he used to. I mean, it's just evident. Nobody, if you've been practicing, you don't chip like he's been chipping. I'm sorry. Chipping, these teachers are making a big – Hank Haney and these guys are making a big deal about it in the
news.
We're
talking about practice, not a game.
Yeah.
Not-
yeah, we're talking about practice here. And he's got what? Tiger's got like a 20-acre facility in his backyard, you know, to go practice all the time. You know, and he lives right there, you know, by all those great places in Palm Beach. But, you know, he's not putting the time in. It's evident. Nobody chips like that. Paul Azinger, I don't know if you saw the clip on ESPN of Paul Azinger addressing his problems. And Azinger says his chipping can be cured in a matter of minutes. And that's exactly right. These other guys that are talking about that are just full of beans and hot air, I'm telling you. Somebody like Tiger Woods, it's all confidence with him right now. You can just see he has no confidence. He's dead stopping at the ball and flipping his hands. And that's going to kill you with chipping. Everybody knows that for chipping, you have to keep that club head moving through the impact area. He's dead stopping and flipping those hands. He's clueless at it right now. But a little bit of practice, you know, he'll be fine with the chipping. I'm not worried about the chipping. Here's the other thing that nobody's talking about. Carlos, his club head speed has increased nearly 6 miles an hour from last year. That's unbelievable. 6 miles an hour. That's like 18, 20, 22 yards off the tee. That also means that if that club head is off 1 degree at impact, left or right, that ball's going an extra 20 yards left or 25 yards right. And that's exactly what he's seeing right now. You know, I watched some old film of Ben Hogan today, and I especially paid attention to Hogan's head. You know what? His head hardly moved. With that languid movement and all that turning that Hogan did, his head stayed right there. You watch Tiger's head, and that thing's moving 6 inches up and down. I mean, it goes down with the modern swing. They compress down into the ground and then spring up off their legs, and his head comes up a lot. You know, the average golfer, if they tried to do that, Carlos, they'd whiff. I mean, they wouldn't even touch the golf ball. That takes a lot of timing and a lot of practice. You got to hit 500 balls a day to be able to do that. And you got to do it every day, and you got to be playing in tournaments, and it's going to be tournament time. Once you can do it on the range, then you got to take it to the golf course. And Tiger might be able to do it on the range, which I don't think he's doing enough of it, but he sure ain't taking it to the golf course right now. But, again, he can fix that. That can come around to where he can keep his foul balls in the ballpark. And once that starts happening, and especially at places like the Masters where the fairways are like 500 yards wide, you know, Bubba Watson shows you just take some big long shots there, and that's exactly what Tiger can do there. But he's got to fix up his chipping, but that will come. But also then Tiger, or back to your point, Carlos, a little bit about the head. But I think if he has the chipping back, if he gets the ball in play, I think the confidence and the mental attitude will come back. So it's all tied together, Carlos. It's all piece of one package. But as soon as he gets that chipping, I think everything else will fall into place. He just needs to hit some more balls with a driver, and he'll get it figured out. That club head speed, that coming back, that's a big issue. Not enough people are talking about that because that's really, really important. If you've been a short hitter all your life like me and trying to get an extra 2 or 3 miles an hour of swing speed and can't figure out how to do it, and he can change 6 miles an hour over a few months' time, that's really big.
Well, you know, to give a little bit of what you're saying, Colt Knost, he tweeted on Friday after that 82 that he saw watching Tiger. And I'm going to read it here. It says, "I watched Tiger hit balls for 30 minutes yesterday on the range, and he absolutely striped it. Something is going on in that head of his." I have to agree. I mean, it has to come down to that. At least, you know, I don't know if you saw him after that round, that he channeled his inner Marshall Lynch when he said, "I'm just doing this so I don't get fined." You know, he said it with a smile. So after an 82, saying it that way, you know, I would have been running out. But at least seems like he knows that he has a problem. I mean, the last time, and more to what you're saying, the last time that he was number one in the official World Golf Rankings was May of 2014. And since then, he's just played only 5 tournaments, missing the cut in 2, finishing tied for last in the Hero, and now shooting his worst career worst 82 in round 2 of the Phoenix Open. So definitely he needs more play. He needs more game. He has fell down to 56, so he's in dire straits of missing the WGC, which I recommend for him to come down to Puerto Rico and play the Puerto Rico Open instead. You know, he can get some confidence there. And I can talk to him about it. And
you just chat him up.
Yeah, you know, I can do that for him. But anyway.
Hey, Tucker, you want to be on the Back Nine Report?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'll do that for the show.
Okay.
So hopefully he'll be here. I don't know. He still has time to miss that. But anyway, hopefully he really does something about it because, I don't know, he looks so lost. He was like he didn't have a game plan at all playing there. And hopefully, you know, Torrey Pines is a place that he can play with his eyes closed and he can still shoot great scores. I mean, so I'm looking forward to seeing him play Torrey Pines. That will let us know where his mind at least is. You know, maybe, like you say, he should go there and go to the practice range. Like Colt Knost said, he saw in the practice range that he was ripping the ball and shooting it straight and all that. So it's definitely on his head. He needs more practice. I have to agree with you, Fred.
But what we have to keep in mind, Carlos, are these tournaments. Last week, this coming week at Torrey Pines, matter of fact, I didn't realize he. I'm sure he shot that 82 on purpose so he could miss a cut, so he could go watch Lindsay ski. And that explains it. I didn't even know that. See, you explained the whole situation there. I it makes sense to me now. But you know, these are all run up, and he's just looking at putting things together to get ready for that second weekend in April. That's all that he's really concerned about at this point. Everything right now that he's doing is just to get ready for that. The WGC at Doral, if he would miss that, that would be kind of big. But, again, if he'd happen to have a top 10 finish here, you know, and then do well at the Honda, he'll be okay going into Doral. You know, he may have to add a tournament in Texas if he doesn't get to play at Doral to get another rep in. But I still don't think you're going to see him in Puerto Rico, Carlos. But you know, you can always dream about it.
Don't do that to me.
But you know what? All the naysayers and you know all the people that want to see him do badly, I just caution him. You know what? The guy's a little older. He's a little wiser. He knows he has to kind of take it easy on the body, the legs especially, and he wants to do well in the majors. These little tournaments, they mean nothing to him right now. If he would win them, great. But you know what? He's just looking at different parts of his game that he's working on right now, and these are just a gauge to see where he's coming along in his progress.
And hopefully that's true. I really want to see him succeed and see how he can challenge Rory McIlroy, who really, when he's right at his best, like he was this past weekend, there's nobody like him. And maybe the only one at his best is Tiger Woods. Hey, Fred, let's take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our final putts. So anybody, don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now that we have 2.5 minutes, just I noticed, this show has gone too quick, Fred. What's going on, man? Hey, Fred, give us some final thoughts before we close the show.
Yeah, just a couple things real quick. We're speaking of Tiger. It was announced he will partner with Matt Kuchar in the Bridgestone America Cup in October. He was supposed to be last year, but then he got injured and had to take the time off. And so Kuchar had to pair up with somebody else. The tournament is a Latino America Tour event, developmental circuit. Last year's inaugural event was played in Argentina. So that's going to be a big boost for that thing. You've got Phil got fired last week by his brother, Tim, who's the assistant coach at ASU. Phil wasn't – it was nice to have his name involved there, but Tim decided he really needed somebody that could do some work because he couldn't do it all himself. So he had to fire Phil so he could afford to hire somebody else. On a sad note, Kel Nagel died. A lot of people probably don't know that name, but he died at the age of 94. He was from Australia. He died in Sydney. He is one of four Australians who have won the British Open, along with Peter Thomson, Greg Norman, and Ian Baker Finch. The defining moment in Nagel's career came in 1960, when at the age of 39, he outdueled Arnold Palmer to win the British Open at St. Andrews. Nagel won 80 professional tournaments, including one every year between 1949 and 1975. He had a very long career. He was a very solid golfer internationally, especially down under. He was always in contention. He also lost playoffs to Gary Player in the 65 U.S. Open and was in the top five of the British Open six times between 1960 and 1966. and he finished runner-up to Palmer in 62 at the Open. So he had a very good career. Everybody said what a wonderful guy he was. Never had a chance to meet him, but watched him play and followed his career for a long time. So I'm sure he will be missed around the world.
Well, back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, who was Grantland's Shane Ryan, who took some time to address the allegations about Patrick Reed on his upcoming book, Slaying the Tiger, a year inside the ropes on the new PGA Tour. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on TuneIn on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.